This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Good day.
Bonjour.
How you doing, partner? Welcome to I Read the News Today, Oh Boy.
Or IRTN for short.
Well, that's Matt Adams, if you can't tell from the accent or the attitude, is an American and a Canadian.
And that's Keith Koscheck, the Yanks from Iowa, the bleeding heart of America.
Okay, well, today we're going to be hitting all the election issues that happened last night when we were up till about 3 in the morning, you and I. And some news, we have a resignation of Donald Rumsfeld today. We'll throw that in the mix, too.
Na 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 na.
Na 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 na. Na.
Hey.
Goodbye.
But first, right.
Yes.
Our segment, Below the Fold, some news you might have missed in under 3 minutes.
Okay, voting stuff. Louisville, Kentucky, a voter tried to beg off casting a ballot in a judicial election because he said he didn't know enough about the candidates. The poll worker on duty told the citizen he had to vote anyway. Eventually, police say the voter was grabbed by the neck and tossed from the polling place. The sheriff's spokesman said the man went back only to be thrown out again. That's when the election officials called police. The 42-year-old poll worker has been charged with assault and interfering with an election. As an elections official put it, that about tops off the day.
And according to Dean Jensen, the head of the Virginia Board of Elections, the FBI is doing election intimidation in Virginia. Jensen told MSNBC, quote, "The FBI is now investigating allegations of voter intimidation and voter suppression," unquote, and that officials have documented, quote, "dozens of phone calls that were made to heavily Democratic precincts, in which people who were receiving the calls were either incorrect information about polling sites or misdirecting about election laws." You can hear a sample call by going to www.youtube.com and search for George Allen Voter Suppression.
From Juan Kent, our favorite mist-strangling Pennsylvania congressman went to his polling place yesterday and, like most people, had no idea how to cast his vote. As he stood at the new electronic voting machine, Donald Sherwood quickly made his selections but then ran into a glitch. "How do I send it?" he asked a poll worker. The woman instructed him to hit the red vote button at the top and then confirm. Sherwood, who reportedly paid his mistress $500,000 to keep her mouth shut until Election Day, did lose the race in Pennsylvania's 10th Congressional District, but 95,351 people did vote for him anyway. For shame.
And yesterday's election is one that Bush would love to forget, but the Bush whitewash house. History is never what it was. The official White House website contains footage of Bush's famous or infamous mission accomplished speech. But the mission accomplished banner is nowhere to be seen. Due to some creative video framing. In other news, Bush declared double bust good. You can see the doctored video on HuffingtonPost.com.
All right, and last but not least for me, from the Allentown, Pennsylvania Morning Call, a man who reportedly believed Republicans were conspiring to steal yesterday's election entered an Allentown polling suite, signed in, and proceeded to smash the screen of one of the electronic voting machines with a metal cap paperweight poll volunteer set. Michael Young, 43, will be charged with felony criminal mischief and tampering with voting machines, according to police. Police gave no motive, but a source said Young, a registered independent, believed Republicans had conspired to win the election by using electronic ballots. The Diebold smashing weapon was an actual statuette of Felix the Cat. Poll workers say Young smashed the machine cat ears first. I suggest you give the cat to Karl Rove as a souvenir.
And speaking of elections, the annual Corruption Perception Index, the CPI, was released this week by Transparency International, a Berlin-based organization. The CPI is a composite index that draws on multiple expert opinion surveys that polls perceptions of public sector corruption in 163 countries around the world. It scores countries on a scale from 0 to 10, with 0 indicating high levels of perceived corruption and 10 indicating low levels of perceived corruption. Countries with a significant worsening in perceived levels of corruption include Brazil, Cuba, Israel, Jordan, Laos, Seychelles, Trinidad and Tobago, Tunisia, and the United States. On the clean scale, the U.S. is tied in 20th place with Belgium and Chile, while Canada holds the 12th spot, 14th right under the green tape.
All right, and that is the news you may have missed in a few minutes or less. Well, Matt, you were up late last night as I was. I think you were out viewing the American election with friends up there, weren't you?
Oh, I went to the Democrats Abroad party in a pub, and even though I'm not a Democrat or abroad, I went, and it was pretty good. The sound wasn't great, and you know we weren't really clear what we were doing, so it was very democratic.
Uh-huh. Were you watching?
People were pumped.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, were you watching CNN or?
Yeah, they had CNN up, you know, and then we had a bunch of, you know, media were showing up. You know, CBC was there and CTV was there, and they were just interviewing Democrats. And I had the chance to tell CBC that it's been a horror show of corruption and incompetence that is one of the reasons we got such an interesting turnout last night.
Mm-hmm. And that was interesting. I had CNN on the TV, and of course I had CNN on the internet, so I have everything here at my desk. But you know, that's kind of one of the first issues to be brought up here, is that the pollsters say, now the war generally played a major role in this election, but the economy less so. It was the corruption issue.
Yep.
That turned off many American voters and got a lot of the swing voters who went Republican starting in 1994 to go big for the Democrats. Thank you, Mark Foley, for starters.
Well, and then you have to remember there are still people under investigation for Abramoff.
Right.
So, you know, again, remember, as we said last week, so there's about 14 Republicans under investigation and about 4 Democrats. Not all for Abramoff, but nonetheless under federal investigation. So there's still some seats that could be lost.
Now, we had discussed the leading up to the election, but I have to ask you, first of all, were you surprised? Right now, as you and I are speaking here at about 4:15 Eastern, 3:15 Central, CNN gave Montana to Tester. They were going to probably have some kind of protracted recount or counting in Virginia. I think that's going to hold. I think the Democrats are going to get a one-vote majority in the Senate. We know they have the House. How surprised were you with the results?
Well, I lost a bet.
Oh.
I said that the Democrats would take the House, but I lost $2.50 in the bet because I said they'd take 18. And it was more like now we're talking 28. Could go higher.
Well, I figured that the Democrats would win the House going away. I thought that the best they could do going into last night was about 50-50 in the Senate. At about, I would say about 10:30 in the evening, my time, I would not have given you a plugged nickel for the Democrats' chances of getting a 50-50. I thought they were going to lose they did lose Tennessee. I thought they were going to lose Virginia. I thought they were a good bet to lose Missouri. The way that these races turned around in the wee hours of the morning, especially McCaskill's in Missouri, and of course the near miracle of Virginia with Jim Webb, I was doing a blog roll on Babbel, which is rabble.ca's message board. And we had put the thing to bed at about 10:45, and then about an hour later, as we kept watching, and I kept coming back and saying, if anybody's still up, there's something really weird going on in Virginia. So I was really surprised at that. My biggest disappointment was that Corker won in Tennessee, which I considered an absolute disgrace. What would you say would your biggest disappointments be with the elections?
Well, I was angry that Lieberman won.
Yes.
I was angry about some of the ballot measures against same-sex marriage, though the conservatives got hammered on abortion in South Dakota.
Yes, thankfully.
Those were the things that really, really annoyed me. But, you know, I get to do my victory dance over people like Rick Santorum and over our friends and Kathleen Harris.
Sure.
The question I have, do you think, and maybe we'll know in the next few hours, but do you think that Allen's campaign will do a recount? I'm not so sure they would. They'll have 7,000 margin, but plus, if they do a recount, then, you know, people are going to be sniffing around at all these tricks. You know, FBI's already down there.
Right.
And it's not going to look good and why take the risk? But on the other hand, the White House might be leaning on them hard.
I think and this is gut feeling based on the signals that I'm just kind of picking up, almost psychically reading between the lines of what's being said.
Complete crap.
I think you can actually pick up by the words used and the vocal inflections that I think what they're doing is they're simply putting down their marker in case they want to have a recount. Go ahead. They're right now canvassing, and as part of the canvassing in Virginia under the law, let them go ahead and count those 30,000 absentee ballots from Fairfax County. And I think when they do, they will find that at least 2/3 of them are going to be going to Jim Webb. I think at that point. Well, Fairfax,
usually absentees lean Republican.
But Fairfax County being the suburbs of Washington D.C. full of government workers, I think generally vote Democratic. I'd say 2/3, but certainly I think at least a simple majority of those Fairfax absentees will be Webb people. And I think when those canvasses are done, I think you're going to probably see the people on George Allen's side suddenly decide that maybe they'll come out and they'll say, we're going to be really big about this and concede. The wild card is if the White House thinks if they can go to the mat and force a recount where Allen might have a chance to win this. But as every hour goes by and the more we hear about it, the more we hear that it looks like the provisionals and the absentees are going to hold up for Webb, I think that's more unlikely.
Yeah, I'm beginning to think that they'd be fools to do it because it's going to do nothing but help Webb.
Yep.
He can just sit back and say, okay, we'll let the Democratic process go forward to keep an eye on these guys, as some posters have been saying, and then let all the muck rise, all the crap, all the dirty tricks. It's all going to come. The FBI is already there. So.
Right. And they're going to be the sore loser mans this time. Exactly. Yeah, this time so it's not going to look good. And if you're listening to George Bush throughout most of the day, he gave a rather long press conference. What he's saying is I think he's pretty much written off the Senate. He didn't say it, but the way he was conducting himself during that briefing, which I also like to point out, number one, I thought Bush, and I hate giving the man credit for anything, I thought did a fantastic job of putting a best face on it. And I think also he is very angry. The way he was lauding the Democrats in the first few minutes of his press conference today, I think he's very angry with the Republicans. I think he believes they screwed this election up. And I would have loved to have been a fly in the wall last night when Karl Rove tiptoed up to the president and told him that the House was lost. I think knowing what I've read of Bush, some invective and other solid objects might have flown around the room. But I think he's very angry at his own party apparatus for losing this. But
they see it as a Republican loss, not as a Democratic victory.
Exactly.
But the fact of the matter, too, just to go back for a second.
Sure.
The Senate, which is not getting enough reporting, when it's tied, sure, the vice president gets to be the president, but it changes at the committee level. Usually they split. So when it was tied earlier in his administration, which it was at the beginning, the committees were split 50-50 versus majority Republican, majority Democrat. So already at a 50-50, it changes the committee structure.
And the other thing is, of course, from what I understand, Dick Cheney would have to fund both committee staffs equally.
Well, that's been precedent. I don't know if he has to, but it would certainly be precedent. And since they control the House, he doesn't want to be pissing off the party somehow.
Right.
I mean, you got to remember, the Republicans thought they were going to have this permanent majority, and so they kept changing the rules around introducing bills, around debate, even if they wanted to change around filibuster.
Well, right.
Guess what? The Pipers come home.
Good point.
And he's singing a different tune.
Well, let me ask you then here, what do you think now? Let's assume 51-49 in the Senate Democrat and, of course, the House. We have Harry Reid. We have Nancy Pelosi. What do you think is going to be the net effect between now and the 2008 elections?
Well, the Democrats are going to initially put forward a face of great bipartisanship because they've learned from the 1994 Republican election. They overreached. I mean, you know, Newt Gingrich came out and said all kinds of great things about Democrats, and then they went nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had a backlash, and, you know, Newt Gingrich had to resign. And we'll see if Nancy Pelosi can be the first Speaker of the House without a sex scandal in a while. But, you know, so I think that's what we're going to get, a lot of middle-of-the-road stuff, quiet. You know, they're not radicals. The Republicans are radicals. They really are.
I think what you're going to see, the Democrats are going to roll out stuff, I mean, just literally candy and lollipops for the American middle class. We're going to have a raise in the minimum wage. We're going to have some serious attention paid to health insurance, to energy costs.
The 9/11 Commission.
9/11 Commission is going to be right. And then we're going to have a review of the Iraqi war effort. Now, here's where we come to the line of demarcation. I don't think that the Democrats have the stomach to really face down Bush on anything other than the conduct of the war. I think what they're going to do is see if they can find a way to at least get some partial troop withdrawals going between now and the election, claim as long as they can claim credit for them and not have Bush take credit for them. So they're playing they're dancing a very fine line, I think, here with Iraq. But the worry that I have, and the column I wrote for Rabble kind of says this as well, is that they may play footsie on Iraq to such a degree with Bush that by the time the primary season rolls around, their progressive activist core base might be very, very upset with them, and it could lead to a bloody primary season. So I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it also depends like what role Jack Murtha is going to play. There's some talk that maybe he'd be House Majority instead of Reid, or and you know he wants to plan out. I also think you know the Baker is in there with the bipartisan commission recommending a change for the war. I think the face-saving way for Bush to get out and the Democrats to say, well, look, we helped do this, then it becomes less of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the Republicans get is the Democrats don't get the hammer on them for 2008, but the Democrats say, look, we'll get out of here. So
right.
I'm thinking it might go that way.
I think you're right. I think that these guys, one thing I like to say about the Democrats, how surprised I was that they played this campaign so smart. Their get out the vote effort was the best I have ever seen. I mean, you have to go back to Hubert Humphrey for this kind of effective get out the vote from the Democrats, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, their numbers weren't super up, but they did bring out more Dems than Republicans for the first time in years.
Right, and I also think their ad campaigns this year were absolutely spot on. Real gut level hitting ads. The one I liked about the father and the son in the bedroom, you know, dad who's going to take care of the war, who's going to solve global warming, and the voiceover says, you know, what are we going to tell our children? I mean, that is the stuff that I've been waiting to see from the Democrats, and I think this campaign, and Bush gave them tons of credit in his speech today. He said they did everything right. So that's good. And I think looking forward to 2008, I think the Democrats have a lot to be hopeful for. They are playing a very delicate game here going up to the primary season. And, you know, I think that there's a lot that they have to be careful about, but certainly there's a lot not there that they can be hopeful.
Well, you know, the Howard Dean's got the 50-state strategy because
right.
He wants to actually have campaign offices in all 50 states, and I think that's very important. On the other hand, he goes on television last night, the polls are still open. He says, oh, you know, we're not going to pull out of Iraq. We're not going to cut and run. Using the Republican phrases. Totally stupid.
Right.
Marianne Huffington did a nice post on it. She called it sort of jaw-dropping speech that he gave on the news.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're going to be very middle of the road, very kind of careful, because that's always what they are. And it's the kind of thing like, you celebrate today and you're sad tomorrow.
Well, I think at some point between now and 2008, you know, I know we could perhaps gag John Kerry. I don't know what you do about Howard Dean. Maybe have somebody there with a little switch in the back, you know, to turn him off when he starts going off message. But those are the two guys whose mouths I worry about.
But on the other hand, Howard Dean's the one that it's like his. He's got the guts. He just has to keep his mouth careful.
Right. And, of course, Rahm Emanuel is getting a lot of credit also for engineering what happened last night.
Yeah.
And I, as much as I don't like Rahm Emanuel's business centrism, generally part of the Democratic Leadership Committee, you know, credit needs to be given where it's due. I'm going to cross my fingers. I'm very happy today. I'm very hopeful and optimistic. I hope it lasts. I think the next few months will be the tail of the tape. We'll see how we go into the primary election season. I'm certainly thinking Hillary Clinton will probably run for president. I think John McCain on the Republican side has all been announced. So, you know, it's going to be kind of interesting. But the other thing I wanted to get into, unless you have anything more of the election, but I did want to talk about Rumsfeld today. I was surprised at this. I shouldn't be, but I was. I think this is a good move by the Bush administration to do their best to defuse a lot of the animus that has built up both among Democrats and Republicans against this administration's handling of the war in Iraq, and especially among independents, 60% of whom voted Democratic last night, and foreign sources, other countries. I think, and one thing I will mention that I have been watching today, ever since the announcement that Rumsfeld was quitting, the stock market just took off. So,
well, you had last week, you had the all four branches of the American military had an editorial in their official newspaper calling for his resignation.
Right.
The Army, the Navy, the Air Force. And
right. All the Military Times publications of all four branches. Now, it's all pointed out that those are all privately owned, but nevertheless, they are so tight with the military establishment that for them, they're owned by Gannett, by the way, but for them to come out and say that, though, that was a very powerful statement. Very powerful.
And clearly they had this lined up in advance. You can't all of a sudden have Robert Gates lined up as your new defense secretary unless you already worked with him and talked to him a bunch of times. And so they're just waiting. And
Well, Bush admitted he lied to the press about this. About an hour or so ago, he was giving a press briefing, the one I was talking about, and one of the reporters was mentioned, well, when we sat down with you last week, you said, no way. You know, and he said, well, I told you that to get you to move on to the next question. Because Bush said, I didn't want to drop this bombshell in the waning days of an election season. So he admitted that a week ago he told the press a bald-faced lie about Rumsfeld's future. He gave Rumsfeld a great big vote of confidence a week ago, knowing at that time that he was already gone.
Yeah, well, there's a shocker. The other thing I want to bring up
sure.
is that how does this have an impact on Harper's government and his connection to Bush and Canadian role in Afghanistan and Iraq? I think it further weakens their position, and I think very evident they've overreached and he bet the wrong horse.
Well, I think that's an excellent point. And I was going to ask you, has there been any official comment from the Harper government on the election so far today?
I was looking around and couldn't find anything.
Me neither.
So I'm a bit surprised by that, but maybe we missed it. But if they did, they did it like between snack and some committee.
I think you're right. I think that they're keeping their big mouth shut, and I think that there is probably a little bit of anxiety there that they are now, as Harper's people, are just joined at the hip now to a bleeding lame duck government that is not going to be able to do very much. I think it's just another blow for Harper. Again, we had discussed last week whether they were going to be heading for an election this spring. Do you think that this perhaps continues an erosion toward a possible call for election in the spring?
Very hard to say, but I think once again they're in trouble, and the argument that they make and the right wing makes in Canada is that the critique of the Americans is a problem on the left. And that we're critiquing Bush and that's anti-American. Mm-hmm. Well, if it's anti-American, then why do the majority of American voters do it? You know, this notion that you can't criticize and you can't, you know, they're beginning to use that American Republican language, and now it comes back and bites them, and you think that can't help their election prospects because now they've lost their big thing. You know, we're tough, we're standing up in America. Well, Americans don't want that.
What do you think this does for Michael Ignatieff's chances to lead the Liberal Party? Does
it
hurt him?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure. What do you?
I think it can't help but hurt him. I really do. He is so identified with kind of, you know, he would deny neoconservatism, but certainly he is connected with the American establishment in many people's minds. And he's a chicken hawk, no doubt about it. So I think this may even fatally wound him in the Liberal leadership race. I don't think that the Liberal Party of Canada wants to put him up there as a party leadership with his connections to what has really simply been a political system in the United States that's just been shot up last night.
Yeah, I mean, years ago I said when Bush got elected the second time, that the one silver lining I saw was that the world, and by the world, I'm sorry, I meant the world had seen it, that Americans would realize the mistake they made and they would just be really slow learning. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they're going to learn it on the backs of many people and the deaths of many people. But when he ended, you know, the economy hadn't been totally tanked. It wasn't extremely clear like it is now how bad the war was, because the media wasn't telling the stories they're telling now. Mm-hmm. And so if he had lost, people would have said, well, you know, we wouldn't have had, you know, there would have been more of a debate still going on. Mm-hmm. But now the debate, as far as many American voters are concerned, is over.
Well, and I think what Americans want to see is they do. And here's one interesting thing I want to point out in Bush's speech. Somebody asked him, "Mr. President, now that the House and the Senate look to change, do you think that you'll be able to get movement on the immigration issues that are near and dear to you?" And he really appreciated the question. He said, "Well, thank you for asking. As a matter of fact, I think more Democrats are going to help me with the immigration issues that I want to get passed." Now, Bush is again for a guest worker program, and I think that this is going to be this is another body blow to neoconservatism, and I think a lot of the Republicans in this country who wanted to build up a wall, who wanted to aggressively go after the so-called illegals, this is not anything that Bush ever really wanted. So I think that he is seeing, at least in one respect, that he can play ball with the Democrats on immigration issues and perhaps can play some ball on other issues as well. And I think the Democrats are going to look at this and say, you know, as long as we can take credit for turning his administration around, that is to say, in some respects, you have the opposite effect of the Republicans who helped Joseph Lieberman get elected last night. If the Democrats can turn around and say, we took this battered, failed presidency, and for the sake of America, we brought it to a point where it didn't know further harm, then I think they can use that as an election issue.
I think some of it's going to come down to what kind of party discipline they have. You know, unlike in Canada, which has extreme party discipline, just absolutely ironclad, much more than in Britain even. With a non-parliamentary system, obviously people can vote any way they want.
Right.
And there's some very conservative Democrats who are elected, and I think that the immigration issue is going to be a very interesting bedfellows getting together. A lot of aisle crossing on that.
Right.
That probably will fall down the side of some sort of guest worker program.
And I think guys like Jim Tester, Jim Webb, I think these guys would have been Republicans maybe 5 or 10 years ago even.
Yeah.
So I think that Pelosi and Reid, if he is the House or Senate Majority Leader, are going to have to work with a number of conservative Democrats who are going to be sympathetic to some of the things that are coming from the White House. Now, again, when I see Wall Street take off like it is today, I also, in this country, a lot of people say, this is what we want. We want this kind of divided government. We want to force these people to reach some kind of compromise and work together. Now, whether that happens or not in the next 2 years is anybody's guess. But I think what we're seeing today is what most factions of this country really want to see. The only people who hate what happened last night are the ultra-conservatives, the neoconservatives, the war hawks, those kind of people. The religious right now, I would say, is lying there literally shattered. I don't think enough attention has been paid to it. The religious right is really shattered this morning. And whether they can pick up the pieces and become a viable political force for 2008 remains to be seen.
Yeah, I think they have to do a little regrouping. They took a major hit.
Absolutely.
With scandals and everything else. Well, you know, we've used up a lot of time.
All right, I think we've covered it.
Well, it's been the sound and the fury. I want to apologize to all three listeners to our terrible sound. It's not rabble.ca's fault.
Nope.
It's Keith and I's crappy equipment.
Skype. I'll blame Skype.
But you can, and Skype.
And Skype.
But we will. You can't help us out. You can help Rabble out by becoming a membership at rabble.ca/membership.
Do you get riled up by mainstream media? Does the right wing make you want to raise a ruckus? Then Rabble is the place for you. Rabble.ca and the Rabble Podcast Network are launching our yearly membership campaign. We need your support to make sure that we can keep raising a ruckus with our independent news and podcasts. Go to Rabble.ca to find out what rewards are in store for new members. We've got DVDs, books, magazine subscriptions, and more fun giveaways to thank you for supporting Canada's most rabble-rousing independent news site, Rabble.ca.
Absolutely, and I hope people will join Rabble. And also, again, well, as always, I want to thank the Arrogant Worms for letting us use their music for some of our intros and outros as well. And that's the time we have to solve this world's problems for this show. We'll be back soon to provide our own particular Canadian and American spin on the world. And I read the news today. Oh, boy. This is Keith Gottschalk from the Bleeding Heart of America.
And Matt Adams from the Heart of Stuck Potatoes.
All right, and we'll see you next time on IRTN.
George Washington was the president, but now he's dead. Mackenzie King was prime minister, but now he's dead. So don't go into politics, you'll end up dead. Don't go into politics, you'll end up dead. Oppenheimer built the bomb, but now he's dead.